What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, Pediatrics Tips for Finding Out What Hurts, number 194. This week, our guest is Dr. Amy Kristen Nguyen. Hun, I always say Nguyen.
Attuned, yeah. Weird H in it.
Yeah, I always do that. So when we were at the hospital and they're like, who's your pediatrician? Dr. Amy Kristen Nguyen. Who? We don't have anybody out. Anyways, Dr. Amy Kristen Hun.
Either way.
Okay.
I'm married into it. Doesn't matter.
One day I'm going to get it right. One day when all my kids are 18. I am your host, Jeremy Jackson. Sitting right beside me, we've got
Cooper.
Joshua.
Juanita.
Nicholas.
Tiana.
And say hello, Dr. Amy.
Hello.
All right. So she goes by Dr. Amy in the pediatrician's office. It's easier for the kids to say. So if I say Dr. Amy, that's why. It's not disrespectful. That's actually what she goes by. If you want to join our conversation, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, using hashtag TheSMB on Twitter. And we've got Mariana watching Twitter there, so you can throw your comments out on Twitter. What hurts from a pediatrician's perspective? So a way to figure out with somebody who can't communicate well, doesn't communicate well, has a language barrier, how to figure out what hurts and then how to fix it. So Nick has got our first question of the topic. Go ahead, Nick.
Can you tell us a story of a time you had trouble communicating with a patient in pain?
And we're talking to Dr. Amy there.
Okay. It's not going to work if I get to hear myself. With little kids, most of them can't tell you. The moms just say they were limping, he's walking funny, and so sometimes you have to just watch them walk to figure out what's hurting. I got to quit saying people have to keep talking to them. You watch how they sit. You watch what they're doing. If they have a hip pain, is their hip angle open? Is it one foot? Are they not moving their ankle? Or are they not moving their knee? So watching kind of the mechanics of it, like an ortho problem, a bone problem, or a leg problem, you kind of watch how they're moving it around. Some kids will come in and the moms will say, she was saying her stomach really, really hurt. And I ask her to get on the table and she just jumps right up on the table. I'm like, well, not that bad. So without touching them, without really doing anything, just watching how they move and see it, they're holding their stomach, they look pale, or they're laying on the table. That's always a bad sign. If 3-year-olds laying on the table, they're really sick. Because otherwise they should be worried about everything else. And so I have some kids also that are bigger and should be able to talk to me, but I have some autistic patients that can't speak. So then you have to kind of go again with what the parents say, because they know them better. But I can, they wince, they move, they're holding it. You kind of go from there. And then, so that's people just can't communicate. But if there's a language barrier, a lot of times I have a couple of nurses that will speak Spanish. That's usually the language I have trouble with. Otherwise it's usually English. So I'll have people translate for me. You ask a really simple, short question. It's hard for me. I have to zip my lip and just stop and wait for the answer. Or even if there's the child speaks English, but grandma speaks Spanish and grandma wants to ask me questions, I have to look at the kid and say, tell her this, and stop. And make sure she talked as long as I spoke. So I know that she really said she shouldn't have ice cream or whatever it was I said. And then grandma nods. And I have some nouns and body parts, but I got zero verbs. And so I don't know if you're do it, don't do it. I would miss all that. So I just have to make sure that we're hitting the right nouns. And so specifically, I guess it's more you watch them move. So there's one little guy, mom said his foot hurt. He was autistic. He couldn't tell me. So I had to kind of watch what joint he stopped at. Did he not move his knee, or was he more the ankle, or was it the hip? Was it kind of for the whole leg? And so you just kind of watch them move. But otherwise, I kind of all day long, there's somebody who doesn't tell me where it hurts and I have to kind of figure it out. So there's not anybody real specific I could think of. Sorry. Is that good? Okay.
So when you have language barriers or mm-hmm. communication barriers, what do you do to work through that specifically?
Sure. Well, like I said, if sometimes, depending on how old the child is, I can get started and I can do the physical exam without necessarily being able to communicate with the parent in the room as much, because my nurse, the person who puts the person in the room, speaks Spanish. So she can give me good hints for where we're going with all of it. And then usually I can only think of maybe one patient that I feel like I don't communicate well in English. Otherwise, everybody kind of tells me stories and I know kind of what their ability is. And once everybody's in school, pretty much I can communicate in English with them because they practice for 6 years, or at least they've known me for that long, so they know how to talk to me. But you have to be really specific. I'll get to a certain point where I figure out, I think I know what the diagnosis is and I feel like I know the history, but then no matter what, even if grandma really seems confident or grandpa, family seems confident that we've communicated well, I still have my nurse come in because the tone of what you say and which words you pick, if you could pick any word about how worried you are or what it looked like or how they felt or what they were doing. You know, if they're choosing easy words to talk to me, but they have other words they'd rather use, I have my nurse come in and just say, this is what I think. Is there anything she thinks she hasn't told me or they think that they haven't expressed to me accurately? Because you're coming in worried. You know, you're coming in with thoughts and things in the back of their mind. They want to make sure it's not. And if I don't understand those words or they don't feel like they can communicate those words to me, then I'm going to miss. They're not going to feel seen. They're not going to feel like I did a good job listening.
All right. Mike, again, while you're there, feel free to jump in with questions or comments for Dr. Amy. I'm not sure if you caught the intro. Dr. Amy is my children's pediatrician. And so as I sit and watch her ask questions of them or you know, of course, my five-year-old son, don't worry, daddy's an athletic trainer anytime one of our kids get hurt. And so I'm trying to figure out how to ask them what hurts, because as I grab Jonah's leg, you know, his ankle, you know, it hurts, but it's really his knee that he's telling me that hurts. Well, you know, yes, I'm touching your leg. Does that hurt? And so we're kind of trying to figure out is how to be more specific, how to ask good questions and get good answers. And so again, Mike, I know with your master's in pediatric sports medicine, you again just jump in with questions or comments from Dr. Amy. So
what did you learn from that, Dr. Amy?
A little distracted.
That's okay. BKKK came across the screen. Yeah. And I think in medical school, when you're studying pediatrics, they talk about, the family will say the kid's limping. Somebody needs to have taken the shoe off and made sure there's not something in the shoe, you know, because the kid's gonna say my foot hurts. Well, is it because of their shoe? Is it because there's something in there? You know, you don't know until you've looked. And in theory, the parents have done that, but you do kind of sometimes back up. And the things that I do all day long isn't always about medical school and medicine. It's about problem solving, you know, so it won't work that way. Well, but we're, you know, the kid won't eat that or won't do that. So, but we're smarter than they are. We can figure out a way to, you know, take an extra McDonald's chicken nugget thing home and put your nuggets in it. They don't know. They're three, you know, so things that we can do to outsmart them and have them agree to do it our way. Which shirt do you want? Because I don't care which one it is, but you're going to think you have a choice. Awesome. Good choice. You know, things to help bridge that gap of what they want and what we want. So what they, you know, where does it hurt? Doesn't always work. A lot of times if it's, you know, they think it's one leg, I'll start with the other one and I'll start as far away from the problem as possible, just so they get to know what it feels like when I'm going to kind of smush their foot and move their toes and there's no fear. My own kids won't let me do it, but everyone else does.
Right, yeah, so, I think that's a good point. Sorry, Jeremy. You know, and I do that with our high school kids all the time. You know, if they tell me it's their right knee, okay, well, let's look at this left one. You know, and I mean, we recognize that in sports medicine as that way of developing that baseline. But I think, like you said, it also allows them to understand what we're going to do. You know, and I do that with other special tests. I'll test it on the good leg.
Right.
Okay, here's what I'm going to do. I demonstrate it. Here's what I'm going to do. Now tell me how that's different on the other, on the injured leg.
Absolutely. If you don't know what it's supposed to feel like, then you don't know if the answer is if it hurts or not. Because I'll stretch somebody's leg around and they'll say, well, it hurts there. And I'm like, well, that's where my fingers are, dude. That's not even what I'm asking you. You know, so you kind of have to show them what it's supposed to be, you know, or a 2 or 3 year old that's limping. You don't know where it is along the leg. You have them lay on their back and then you tickle them a little bit and you show them it's all going to be okay. And then you kind of play with one foot and you play with the other foot. And then, I don't know, I made up this name for it. I call it wiggle leg. So I get to hold their leg like they're a puppet. And so I always use the leg they're not limping with, and we'll kind of move their ankle and move their knee and then move their hip and then wiggle it in and out. And so move that hip joint, move their knee in and out like that. And if it hurts one way or the other, it tells me something. But I always start with the good leg first. And so we play wiggle leg with the good leg, and then they let me do it with the other leg. So I have to get them to relax. 5 and 6 year olds, their legs are too heavy and they won't let me play. But little kids, you can. And little kids, no one knows what the heck, because they can't answer questions well. So you kind of have to give them that, let me be in control of it. And so they have to see what it's really happening on the easy side, on the non-hurting side.
All right, so today I was, one of my high school kids, she hurt her knee, her muscles were tight, so I couldn't really check out, I couldn't do the evaluation like I wanted to. The kid the other day, I mean, high school kids can't just not tighten their muscles.
Right.
Do you have any tips or tricks for just getting them to relax. I know you said do the wiggle leg or start away from it, but you know, I usually will start on the unaffected knee. Right. So you know, I'll start on the right knee, but it's the left one that's hurt. So then I'll do the eval, sit there with the, I'm like, all right, well, so nothing hurts over here, right? So I'm going to move over to the other leg. So then immediately they tense up and I can't do the evaluation. You have any thoughts on that?
If it's knee, I always start at the foot. I just let me touch you. Let me manipulate this and show you how this doesn't hurt. Okay, let me move it all the directions I can move it. Let me move it forward and back just a little bit. Let me move it the way I know it's not. It shouldn't hurt from what you're telling me, so that you can get rid of that quadricep tightness. Just let me show you I'm not going to jerk it the way that you say it hurts. Or, you know, that single finger, where does it hurt? And ask them if they can just use a finger instead of their whole hand. I mean, mm-hmm. If you're just grabbing their knee, I got nothing to go on with that. You got to show me more, where should I avoid? So it's okay over here. And you kind of creep your way towards it. And so then it maybe just be a matter of letting them swing their leg as much as they can and release that muscle and tell them what they're tightening. You're tightening right here. Can you release that for me? And press on it and show them. And that, you know, this is affecting what I'm trying to do. Can you relax that? Okay. Yeah. You know, if you show them at high school age, they should be able to. Okay.
They should be able to.
Yeah. Well, if it hurts badly, then just say, I'm not going to, you know, try to disconnect it. But
yeah, I mean, I've tried several different things, you know, like you put your knee underneath their leg and it's supposed to help them relax, and you do this and tell them act like you're asleep, and they do. And then as soon as you touch them, freak out. Okay. And it's not even something like he was able to play through the season. It's just, he just can't relax. So I'm just trying to, there's gotta be a better way. I mean, obviously if you can get a kid to do it, then you should be able to get, or if you can get a toddler to do it, then you should be able to get a high school kid to do it. And so,
yeah, it's with,
you know, one of the things that we do all the time, is we always, one thing I was taught in college, is taking their hands across their chest like this and have them try to pull that apart, because it distracts them. And so they're spending more time trying to pull their hands apart rather than worrying about your knee that you're down there manipulating.
Do you ever do anything like that with?
I've totally heard that. And then the teenagers, I mean, that I see, maybe they've just known me long enough. I don't know. I don't get as much. But then also, if it's big and swollen, they're not seeing me. They're somewhere else.
Right.
But no, you use your tension. You release it here and you keep these muscles tight, and you can't do all of it at once. And so, yeah, distraction may be what it would have to be. Okay. In the bigger kids.
Definitely. I'll have to try that when they come in. I think one of them will come in tomorrow and I'll see. Maybe I've heard that several times before. It's just, you forget these things. So. All right.
What are some tips with patients that have communication or language barriers?
Sure. It would be difficult for me, I guess, to speak to someone if there was no translator available. I mean, I think we could do it, but if they were in pain, it would be a little harder. So you would have to somehow gain trust, whether that's making them more comfortable, you know, putting something under their head, showing them that you're here to help. You know, if they're really panicked that it hurts, you may have to, if it's like a knee or something that hurts, you may have to ice it first and show them you're there to help if they really, really, you can't get through to them. But then I know, lo siento. I mean, I know enough to say I'm sorry. Lo siento mucho. I know that's for sure something I know. I don't have to use it very often. But the hope would be you'd be able to express that you're there to help, that you're calm, that it's going to be fine. They just need to trust you for a second and help you try to where, you know, point. I think there'd be a whole lot of nonverbal communication. You'd have to do a whole lot of pointing if there wasn't anyone there to give you nouns and verbs. But hurts right here, I don't really care if you say it's stomach or you say it's your intestines or you say it's your liver. If you're pointing, you're going to kind of know the body part they're talking about anyway. And then, like, the autistic kids I have, I mean, some of them are 6'3 and 250. They got to trust me a little bit or I'm going to get smushed trying to get close to them. So within there, it's kind of a matter of just building trust with them and knowing what they don't like and apologizing for making them uncomfortable. I know you don't like this. I know you don't like this. I'm sorry. Let me breathe two more times and we'll be finished. And kind of always telling them, or at least reflecting back what I think they're thinking. If they could tell me, they would go, could you just hurry up? Because this is awful. You know, just kind of showing somebody that you're empathetic, that you understand it hurts, I think goes a long way to getting them to relax.
Do you think that it's easier for you, just because the majority of the kids you see are younger, to remember these tricks, or does it make it easier that some of them are older? Like you just said, there's some of the autistic kids, maybe 6'3", 250.
Yeah.
So does it... does it kind of throw you for a loop? Because I'm just trying to think, you know, I'm in the mindset of, you know, I got 15 to 18 year old kids. This is normally what happens. And,
right.
you know, we get in a rut groove, and yeah. get in a groove. And so do you think that helps your variability or?
I do. I mean, I think, you know, there's, you're starting from just a couple of days old, you know, so there's a whole lot of people who are not communicating with me that I have to watch what they're doing to know what to do next. I have to reflect back what they're giving me. So, you know, the 4-month-old that doesn't want to be on the table anymore, as soon as I'm finished, I let mom pick them up. You know, I try to communicate with them quickly and right away while they're laying there. So making eye contact, making sure that I'm calm, that if there are babies that don't like loud noises, like if the parents are really quiet, I know I need to be quiet with the kid. If the parents answer questions and ask questions loudly, then I know I can kind of have whatever vocal tone I want. But there's some families I walk in and I have to be really quiet because I'm going to startle these kids because they don't hear that. The autistic kids, you kind of have to keep it low. You have to keep it quiet. You don't come in saying hello real loud. You don't come in right towards them. You kind of just talk to mom for a while and you see that, you let them see that you've established a relationship with their parents and that their parents seem to be calm and fine with you. And then you move on to them. So it's, yeah, there's just so many little people, and the little kids get sick more often. So there's always 2 and 3-year-olds who sort of can talk to me, but then can also have an attitude, not want to talk to me. So I think I have to work extra hard all day long to communicate. So some specialists won't see kids until they're older than 16. And that's ridiculous. A 13-year-old can talk to you just as well as an 18-year-old can, as far as what's going on with them. Mm-hmm. The world, maybe not. How to pay a bill, probably not. But communication-wise, you should be able to have that conversation. The older they get, the more their own worries come into it. So you have to kind of tease out, well, what do you think is wrong? And what do you think might happen if that's wrong? So this guy may think if you pull it just right, just wrong, it's going to end up back where he started. And he's just happy for it to not hurt now, and don't mess with it.
All right. What are your thoughts there, Mike?
Nothing in particular. Nothing, you know. Sorry, I'm
just okay.
Spaced out a minute.
How can we learn to ask better questions so that our patients understand fully?
Sure. As a pediatrician, I don't use the words I learned in medical school very often. I type them, I write them, but I don't speak them. Because there's a whole language that other people don't understand, all the body parts, all that. It's your knee, it's not your patella. It's, you know, I usually avoid those kind of things. So with little kids, I'll say, you know, they got sick yesterday. Before lunch or after lunch? Had you been to music yet? You know, what in the context of their day? But I like this time of year because I can say before Halloween or after Halloween, before Thanksgiving, after Thanksgiving. I know exactly within a couple weeks time frame when everything started. My stomach's hurt forever. No, not forever. Since spring break last year, since, you know, kind of putting things in perspective for the patient. And I'll ask 8-year-olds questions and the parents will look at me like, was that even English? I'm like, he answered it, didn't he? Yeah. Better or worse than last time, but not like yesterday. Uh-huh. They're like, what did you even ask them? But kind of communicating with their day before school, after school.
So just making things relevant to them.
To them.
Okay.
Yeah, because they'll, what did you have for lunch? I don't know. Did you have a sandwich? Who did you sit next to? I sat next to so-and-so. Oh, I had this for lunch. You know, things that kind of, kids don't always remember things unless you put them back in that place, and then they can remember more.
And I think one of the things you said earlier is you have to just be quiet. Because with Jonah, my oldest, mm-hmm. he'll be trying to tell me something, and we all, you know, we're busy, or he's 5, so sometimes he stutters, or he says, but daddy, I wanted to tell you this, you know, and so right. It just takes, so I just have to sit there and wait and wait and wait. So I think in my athletic training room, like today, I had, I think, 8 kids in there injured, all of them needing my attention, and I'm trying to do evaluation. So if I don't stop and listen, then I can't really find out what's wrong, because it may be that, well, I did this, but yesterday before that I did this, and that's when I really heard it. So if I don't just, I got to remember to stop and listen. So
yeah, I talked to someone 15, 20 minutes once about how their back hurt, and I thought I had it all figured out, and I was started to say something, and they're like, well, it didn't really hurt bad until they hit me with a tennis racket. Dude, how's that not the first thing you tell me? So now as we talk and somebody says their back hurts, this, you didn't get hit by a car, you didn't get hit by a bat, you didn't fall, you didn't, I mean, I list all the crazy things people have told me. No, I'm like, you'd be surprised what people won't say.
Right.
If they wait for you to ask them first. I'm like, no, just tell me. So sometimes, you know, adults, I suppose, would say it, but 15, 18 year olds, maybe that wasn't important. No, that was important.
Yeah.
You know, so just asking anything else right before you think you have an answer.
Okay, so making it relevant to their day, and then like I just said, listening fully.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then by making it relevant, we can talk about time frames or and things that were, you know, my stomach started hurting after lunch. Well, what did you have for lunch? I can't remember. And then you said,
yeah.
Just, well, what did the person next to you have for lunch? Or, you know, who did you do after lunch?
Yeah.
And then they start to remember as they begin to discuss it naturally. So, all right. So a big thing for me, obviously, I have 3 boys, a 5-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 1-year-old. Sam, the 3-year-old, every single day, at least 5 times a day, I got hurt. And so, Sam, what happened? I hit my head on the bed or whatever. And so then he's okay. All right. So, but when I do need to check him out, and you know, I was wrestling with Jonah, and he dove at my legs, and then he slid, and his chin hit real hard on my knee. And so then I need to check him out. What are some of the things for kids that are, you know, 5 or under, some of the best tips for me to check out a kid that's 5 or under?
Sure. And that whole I'm hurt or hurt feelings. Mm-hmm. Like, is your pride hurt? Were you scared? Or you have some pain?
Yeah.
So hurt or hurt feelings is a big question my kids always got. And then, is there blood? No. Okay, then you just deal with it. You know, so anybody bleeding? No. My daughter came down with a nosebleed once. I was like, this is when you call me. This is, blood is, I will come for blood. Otherwise, mm-hmm. you guys need to handle it. So it would be like if he hit his chin, and if you saw blood, or even if you didn't, sit him down and go, okay, let me see. And I've had patients where you look them in the face, look them in the eye, and relax, and get them to calm down first, and then it all hurts less.
Okay.
You know, so breathing fast, croupy, making all these crazy noises. Look at me. All of a sudden, all the noises stop. The nurse is like, that was awesome, because we didn't know what to do, what we're going to do with him. Like, he needs to relax. So get him to relax for a second and say, okay, your head feels okay. Your eyebrows are good. Your cheeks are good. Okay, well, you hit your chin. So can I see your lips? Okay, I can see your lips. Can you show me your tongue? No. Okay, well, let me see if I pull your lips down. Can I see your teeth? Okay, show me your teeth. And just see if you could push him to just show you. That'd be awesome. But you may need to baby step it, and just see where everything's happening. My kids know if they're bleeding, they're going to sit there for a second, and I'm going to let them get over it. And then we're going to start looking. And then maybe I'll react or maybe I won't. So, you know, tearing this thing, you bleed a lot. Let's just sit here for a second. Is it going to stop? No, it's not going to stop. Okay, then let's start moving. So giving everybody a second to kind of hit bottom and then come up from there.
Right, so giving them a chance to calm down for the small kids.
A little bit, because otherwise, scary. If you start digging right away, that's just, they're just going to freak out even more.
Okay. Just for asking, how likely is it that jumping off the couch, a kid's going to break his leg or arm?
It kind of depends on how you lounge. You certainly could break a clavicle. My youngest, when he was 1, fell off an ottoman, broke it. You just have to land just right.
Yeah.
So depending on what other structures are around. So you wouldn't necessarily break the tibia, but you could break the fibula off to the side. So how did they land? What are they going to do about it? Are they going to lay there and just scream hysterically, or they're going to get up and try to walk it off? So, you know, we live on a cul-de-sac, and if you fall on my street, everybody else runs and I kind of wait for you. Are you going to get up? What are you going to do? We're going to limp? No, we're going to scream. You know, give them a second to see where they're going to end up. But 3-year-olds can just twist and had a spiral fracture. You know, there's things that can absolutely happen, but they're not going to walk it off. They're going to really insist it hurts. They're not going to walk to the bathroom. They're not going to get up to play. But you have a few minutes to figure that out. If it's not an open fracture, you've got a few seconds to figure out what they're going to do. But yeah, your head expects you to fall from your own height on your own steam. Beyond that, it's from a greater height. Someone pushed you. You're falling on the tile. Mm-hmm. Maybe your skull can't quite handle that.
All right. So that's good to know that. I mean, it could still happen, but just give them a second to see how they react.
Yeah.
So.
If you break your arm, you're going to hold it. You're not going to move it. You're going to instinctively clutch it. And then if the sting wears off, you'll start moving it again.
And then so in general, and which is also good for you guys, some of you have younger brothers and sisters sitting right here. And so you may need to use some of this information at home if you're, because I know that some of you have told me, you know, I was at a little league football game and somebody said, yeah, you're an athletic trainer, or kids have said that before. And so they were the ones that were looking at an injury, but they're only a high school student. So, all right. So moving up the ladder just a little bit, what about a 5 to 10-year-old range, tips for dealing with injuries for those kids? Cause I don't normally see, you know, less than 13-year-old. I saw a middle school kid today, but that's only happens like 3 times a year or something. So.
Sure. Yeah. No, kind of 5 to 10, you know, were they on a bike? Did they have a helmet? You know, what was it, a scooter? How fast were they going? They start to get a little more, a little more gravity behind. They start to get a little more velocity. They're going a little faster. So they're going to be on top of things and jumping off of things. So yeah, they may really, you know, go backwards off the bleachers. Somebody might've pushed them. So they're going to have a little more option. The under five, it's going to be a weird circumstance, you know, how is someone not watching them, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But 5 and 10 year olds can get themselves into trouble. And then it's just usually, you know, they'll pop up. I'm okay. If they're in the middle of doing something fun, you know, or somebody comes in with stitches, were you at least having fun?
Yeah.
Yeah, usually they are. So it's in the middle of something fun. They're just not thinking and not stopping. With that, they're going to be doing activities where they could break something. But again, you're not going to try and just walk it off. You know, a kid jumped off a boat onto a dock, which should not have broken his leg, but it did. He was 12. He was not going to step on it. His family knew immediately, this is not his twisted ankle. He's completely not going to want to step on that. So usually your body tells you what to do with it. They won't usually play through a bad break. You know, a crack, they might walk over to the side of the field, and then they're done. Your body's going to tell you to stop.
All right, so then would any of that change as we move up closer towards around the 15 age?
Only if, I mean, some things they may be able to stubborn their way through. If they really, really want to, they really would want to get back out there. But I guess it depends on the sport. So, yeah, if you got enough padding on, would you not know that something bad happened? Usually if you lay on the ground and don't jump right up, somebody should at least go ask you where you think you hurt. I was the sideline doctor for a team when I was in residency, and this one guy kept getting tackled, and I was like, man, you just need to leave number 8 alone. Please just leave number 8 alone. And somebody asked me a question about albuterol, and I look up and they're like, doc, number 8's on the ground. I was like, great, dude, seriously? He had gotten something in his eye. Yeah, no, don't lay on the ground if you get something in your eye.
Yeah.
So I washed his eye out really vigorously and tried to teach him a lesson that he did not need to lay on the ground for a speck of dirt when he was getting slammed and I was worried about his neck.
All right.
So kind of how quickly they get up, how much they're going to want to kind of limp or hold on to it, or how stubborn they are. If, you know, if they're just going to react, I got to play. If you can know the kids well enough to go, that guy's going to try to play through something that's hurt, you may need to make them sit and make them let you look at it.
All right. We had a girl in middle school tore her ACL, but mm-hmm. never went to the doctor, never had a fix, and kept playing on it. You know, like you're talking about toughing through. Mm-hmm. I mean, the girl tore her ACL. Now she has almost no meniscus left in that knee. She had it repaired. And so I'm just wondering how much that applies, or how much I can really say, well, can he just play through it? Obviously, Sure. Obviously we do our tests here, but mm-hmm. in the middle school, in that set, they don't have athletic trainers there.
Sure.
And so that's something definitely I need to consider. Just want to throw that out
there. Yeah, or, you know, swelling after they play. Is it swollen? Is it sore the whole next day? That shouldn't be. I mean, there's something injured in there. So, I mean, she should have had enough swelling at some point with the initial tear that she shouldn't have been able to play through, or was it slightly torn and she just destroyed it by continuing to play?
Maybe.
So maybe just knowing how competitive they are, and would you play no matter what? Yes. Okay, well then maybe we should sit you down and check you out.
Mike, you got thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, and I see it a lot at the, obviously at the high school level with football. You know, a kid comes off limping or whatever, and you go to talk to him. Oh, I'm fine. And, you know, my way of getting an answer is, well, that's not what I asked. You know, I ask what's hurt, and you tell me I'm fine. Well, that's, you're not answering my question. So now my one way of going around that is, you can't answer me correctly. Do you have a concussion? Do we need to check there? We tend to get answers a little faster that way if I start telling them that I'm just going to pull them from a game, you know. So I think just very specific questions, and when they give you a very general answer that doesn't really fit, you just have to push them to get that better answer.
All right.
Yeah. And when I've had kids that are kind of hurt, and I really think you should sit out the next couple of practices, I really think you should, and they look at you, and I'm like, right now it's your knee. If you keep going, it's going to be your ankle and your hip. Do you want to play in the playoffs? Now is the time to rest this. So, yeah, threatening them not getting to play more if they don't rest now, or, you know, getting taken out with a concussion. Absolutely. You got to hit them where they live. You got to know what you're going to get and get you a response.
That's a great lead in there to Tiana's question.
So how do you get your patients to follow through with your instructions?
With me, it's a little easier because their parents have brought them. So the people they live with want it to get better or are tired of hearing about it. And so if I say stretch and they're not seeing them stretch and you're still complaining, they're going to go, well, you're not doing what she told you to do. So, you know, if I'm telling people to stretch, usually it's, you know, hamstring or quad stretch. And I was like, so when you're popping your popcorn, this is what you should do. So I make the joke that while they're waiting and standing in the kitchen, they should do it. So not in their room, not on their floor, in the room where their family can see them do it. So the next time the mom sees them at the sink doing something, I don't see you stretching. You know, you should, so that the family know what I'm showing them to do or what I'm suggesting they do. And a lot of times I'll say Google it and see what other stretches you can come up with that you think would be more fun than the ones I'm telling you. But usually it's been there for weeks or whatever, and the parents are like, I'm so sick of hearing about it.
All right, so as a pediatrician, do you see 18-year-olds?
Mm-hmm.
And do those patients ever come in without parents?
Sometimes. If you come in and you're 18, at this point you have to sign a release that we can talk to your parents. So it's going backwards the other way. Sometimes they do, but if they are taking the time, driving themselves, getting there, they listen. So it's not like, you know, a 50-year-old that should stop smoking or his feet aren't going to quit hurting. You know, kids are at least in the habit of listening to people and in the habit of sort of doing what people suggest, what parents or people tell them to do. So if they're coming to me seeking advice, usually they follow it because I'm not telling them to go on a diet. I'm not telling them to stop smoking. I'm not telling them to, you know, do the things that people tell grownups that we don't do. Mm-hmm. But usually they're coming because something hurts. It's affecting them. It's not just, can you write a note so I'll never have to go back to work? It hurts when I do this and I can't do my fun, the things I want to do that are fun. And so usually they listen.
Mike, talk to me some about your pediatric sports medicine concerns.
Hold on. Sorry. So pediatric concerns, what do you mean? I mean,
like some of the stuff that you say that, or some of the stuff you know, obviously you're pretty active on Twitter and all that stuff. And so I see you talking about the younger athletes needing athletic trainers because we're all in the high school. So what are some of your concerns there?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, you hear the complaint from college athletic trainers about how these kids come to the college level injured. And, you know, again, that comes back to, well, there's only 37% of high schools across the nation who employ a full-time athletic trainer. Well, at the same time, you know, for us at the high school level, very few middle schools have an athletic trainer. And so, you know, these injuries that are coming in at from sixth and seventh grade are things that are going to affect us as juniors and seniors or whatever. But really, you know, so the pediatric background that I have, we talked a lot about high school kids. You know, and just, you know, as we talk about from a general standpoint in pediatrics and the kid that is not just a small adult, you know, so we have to recognize those differences. And the biggest thing, I'm sure you see it at the high school level, you know, many of the times, this first time these kids are really getting injured, like, you know, kid tears their ACL, that's probably the worst injury they've had, you know, in many cases. And so dealing with the psychological aspect of that, of how are they going to address it, you know, and how do they manage that from a psychological standpoint and from an emotional standpoint that we have to address, and maybe not so much the physical aspect of it, because the physical aspect we're going to be able to handle because that's where we have our training at, but we may not be able to, we may not have the experience necessarily of dealing with that psychological aspect of helping them cope through that process.
All right, Dr. Amy, can you talk about that?
Sure. There's one specific pediatric orthopedic physician that does a lot of training things when you go to conferences. There's one guy in particular who is there a lot. And one of his main talks that I really took to heart when he was speaking was that these kids see themselves as athletes. And if they're a football player and they're a football player first and you tell them they can't play football anymore, then who are they? So if I see it and you should rest it, and I think your season should just be over because I can see that the next 100 years of your life, you're going to wish you babied your knee right now. But all they see is this is my season and every season is their season. Mm-hmm. Then shame on me for shutting them down and not trying to get them physical therapy and not helping them work through it. So, you know, when they're really hurt, what are they going to do about it? Making sure you can tell them this may not be your season. You may be finished with football right now, but we'll have you ready for basketball. You know, and then the younger kids, that they'll take that because they do have multiple sports. By the time you're high school, you kind of have a picture one. But this isn't the time right now. Why don't we sit? You need to sit out these first few games so that you'll be ready for the playoffs. You know, so kind of showing them you want them to go back to it. And this is what you need to do right now to get there. It's kind of from my side of it because I'm not on the field with them, but I'm the one seeing them later. When can I go back? trying to make sure they're strong enough not to hurt themselves some other way.
Okay, just giving them, again, making it relating to them. That's kind of a theme of what you're doing today.
Kind of, yeah.
So their goal is to be back for either next season or to be back for this. And so it's point you towards this, motivate you towards that, and go from there.
Yeah.
Okay. Katmar, she's in the chat room there. Juanita, you can show that there. It says a big issue that she has is notes stating they're out for 2 weeks, no PE or sports. As an athletic trainer, we want to get them moving. We want to get them doing rehab. Can you just discuss your thoughts on notes that say that?
Sure. From my perspective, I'll usually write that if PE is just let's run around a track and they're not trying to accomplish anything. If they're in athletics, I usually phrase it very differently. I'll say, can, you know, no competitions, can work out upper body, can work out lower body, can do everything, but that will not stress the knee. And so I tell the kids, I'm like, you're going to be doing a whole lot of sit-ups on the side of the field, dude. But he's out there. You know, if I try to be more specific with which body part I'm trying to protect. You know, you can walk the track, you can run the track. I don't want you doing squats. I don't want you lifting. You know, that no upper body if it's a shoulder. But I'll ask the kids, do you have PE? Yeah. Okay, well, then you don't care. So you might as well just sit out and rest it. Mm-hmm. You know, okay, it's athletics. Absolutely. So you're in off season right now or you're full on in season? You know, this is the time. Okay, so I'll say no weight room, but you can do this, you know, or well, you can do weight room if you have, only lower body, not upper body. And you can do drills that aren't contact.
All right, so if I get a note from you or from mm-hmm. a different pediatrician mm-hmm. saying this kid is out for 2 weeks, what's going to be the best way for me to get in touch with you or another doctor and establish a conversation saying, hey, I'm the athletic trainer. This is what we do. Can we change that note or can you give me just a verbal agreement that I can do range of motion and you know, rehab exercises with this student instead of just no activity for 2 weeks?
Sure. I guess the hard part, conversation between people is easy. A conversation between a doctor and somebody isn't always so easy. Do you have a release to talk to them? Can I even admit they're my patient? That's the hard part. It could be a lot easier to kind of go through the parents mm-hmm. at that point or have the kids, give the kids, if the kid wants to. If they don't want to, nobody's ever going to see it. They'd rather just sit on the bench for 2 weeks. But if you want to try to attempt to do something, getting a note to the family, is it okay if I contact your doctor or a records release or a release of information? Or I don't know kind of how deep you guys get into all that stuff with training, but that's kind of what it would take for me to answer you, would be that I would need the family's permission to answer you.
All right. So,
but I've got families that call and say, he really has got to go back. The ER said 2 weeks. What do we need to do? Come talk to me, you know, so I can overrule somebody else's note because I know them better. If it was just they didn't know, they were just trying to give you what you wanted, dude. That you know, telling the kids to be more specific with their doctors, and then we'll just absolutely write whatever what they want us to write, not just blanket.
All right, so there's no easy way to.
There's not, unless you have like parents' email. You could totally email the parents and say, I'd like to work with them. Can I get your permission to contact the doctor, or will you contact the doctor and give them permission to have a conversation with me? So, I mean, I don't know how many pieces of paper I would need for all that. But I get parents' calls all the time. He's ready to go back. What can we do to go back? Then usually it's come in to see me. But then the doctor has to be willing to. But that is, you know, somebody just clicked two clicks and that's the note that shot out. They weren't thinking.
Yeah.
Or they don't care that the kid's an athlete and that the kid sees himself as an athlete. You know, that's part of their identity.
So, again, you kind of said that that's not how you would normally do it. It's just 2 weeks, no. But for those people that deal with a lot of doctors, pediatricians, or ERs that say 2 weeks, no activity, is it wrong of us as athletic trainers to do just the active range of motion? You know, are we?
I don't think so. It depends on where it came from. If it came from an orthopedist that just screwed everything back together, yeah, I totally wouldn't do it. You know, if it's coming from an ER that just said he wasn't broken, the nurse typed out the note. Nobody really thought about it. You could certainly, to cover yourself, I would talk to the parents and go, listen, I have this available. I'd like to do this for him. Sure, do it. Okay, you have the parents' permission. Who cares what the note says? You know, the note is they were seen, they missed school, whatever. If the parent's in charge of the kid more than the doctor is, if the parent gives you permission, you know, as long as it wasn't from an orthopedist or a cardiologist, I think you'd be okay. You know, to do range of motion, to do something or to do activities with all the other body parts except for the one that's hurt. You can certainly walk the track with a sling. You just wouldn't run it.
All right. Mike, you got any other thoughts on that conversation?
Those notes drive me absolutely nuts. And I sit here with a stack of them off camera here from orthopedic doctors who really drive me nuts when they do that. Especially when the note, like I have two sitting here right now. Don't even tell me what body part was seen.
Yeah. See, the nurse typed that out. So,
you know, and it's like, that just, it infuriates me. And it, you know, because now, like you said, Jeremy, now we have to try to make contact to, you know, further that. Or in many cases, we just have that kind of general built into our, you know, into our protocols where we're going to be able to do some of that rehab stuff because we don't have specific instructions not to. You know, like this note here doesn't even say that she's out 2 weeks or anything. It just says she was seen and she can come back to school. You know, it doesn't tell me any restrictions, any or anything I can do. So we kind of we use a little bit of our judgment on that. So in that particular case.
And really, I think from your perspective and what you're trying to accomplish, you're trying to help. I think if you ask the parents, you're covered. You know, if the kids are under 18, they're the ones that are in charge. They're the ones that would seek medical care anyway. We have this option available. Did they feel like the doctor expressed anything that said they shouldn't do it? Certainly, you can ask the doctor specifically. But if you have the parents' permission, and if they're 18, you have their permission, I would think it would be fine, unless obviously there was something just, I mean, but it's the kids that are frustrated. It's frustrating kids where they don't seem to have anything wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just an easy note to write.
Gotcha. Okay. So as we were kind of discussing, you mentioned concussion earlier, what kind of training have you had on concussions as a pediatrician?
Sure. Pediatrics, it changes all the time. I mean, what is in the book is totally different than what I learned in school, which is totally different than what's in the journal, is totally different than what was there 6 months. So, I mean, 8 months ago, it was total brain rest. Now that's looking ridiculous, you know? So there's a lot of common sense, but then the main underlying one is, how long did your headache last? A week out of headache. Is there a trainer around to watch you? Or is it just you and the football coach? So kind of what support they have has a lot to do with when, for my patients, I say, we can move forward. Because there's quite a few schools where ready for concussion protocol? Yes, ready for concussion protocol. And that's after I have a conversation about how nauseated, how long were you stupid after you got hit? How, you know, when did your functioning kind of come back? And then trying to be as real as I can with the kids that saying you don't have a headache and you do, what that can mean and how are the next 2 weeks as crucial as the next 100 years? Mm-hmm. And just trying to get my point across that I know you want to go play, but if you go out there and you're distracted with a headache or you're distracted with not feeling right, how mowed over are you going
to
get?
So at what point do you feel that you would send them to a concussion specialist?
Sure. Methodist locally has a concussion center. Mm-hmm. So there is a guy that had a concussion. Maybe, you know, he had waited long enough, was going to try to get started back, but his dad and he really feel like college sports are in his future. So should we go check it out? Absolutely. Go check it out. Go get the baseline test. Let's do it now. Let's make sure that he improves in the next few months before the season starts next year. So grades dropping like crazy, headache that wants to return even when they're not doing anything. We're not going to play with that. We're going to go ahead and move forward to the experts and just make sure that neurologically they're all fine. Because I've had one kiddo that he had maybe a little ADD and then it just went through the roof. And so the rest of his life was falling apart. So let's really not continue the football. Let's get the rest of your life back together.
Gotcha. All right. So I mentioned this briefly. Establishing a relationship. How do I, because we're part of the sports medicine team. You're part of the sports medicine team. Mm-hmm. How do I go about establishing that, building that trust between you and me, between me and the next pediatrician and the next pediatrician and the next pediatrician? So what are your thoughts there?
If you see the kid here and they get hurt at practice, they get hurt at a game and you're the first one and you're sending them off to somebody. And if you had a note on, you know, letterhead, something that said, this is what I saw, this is what I did, this is what I'm capable of doing, this is how much rehab I feel like we can accomplish here. Let me know from what you see, what you want me to do, what I shouldn't do. I mean, because when I get those letters of, should they go through a concussion protocol? Absolutely. That's amazing. Yes. People that just come from it with an ER note, what do you have at school? What's left? Is there anyone going to pay any attention to you? Or is it just you and the, you know, football coach and 100 guys out on the field? You know, is anybody telling you to drink water? What's going on? But if it starts here, if it starts with someone, you're the first person to see them, if they're going to go off to an urgent care, then you're not going to get as big of a response. If they're going to go to their primary, they're going to go to ortho, where there's somebody's going to follow them and take them on as a patient, then I think you would get really far with explaining who you are, what you've got available.
Okay. All right. I know we have like a little paper and it's on Letterhead and that says, you know, this athlete. And then basically it's like a doctor's, we want you to write your doctor's note on this form kind of thing.
Sure.
But it's on our letterhead. And I don't think it has saying, you know, I'm an athletic trainer, this is what I'm capable of. So,
but
maybe
that would letting them know what's available, because someone will say, you know, this kind of hurts. Well, is there a trainer there? Do they have, you know, would they do massage? Would they help you do stretches? And so I'll ask people those questions, but someone who's not sports minded at all, they're just out 2 weeks. They're not going to think about it.
All right. Mike, did y'all discuss any in your master's program about establishing those relationships? Any other thoughts?
I think it just comes down to, you know, establishing those relationships in general, whether, you know, not just the pediatrician, but our orthopedists, physical therapists, chiropractors, whatever it is, you know, just kind of we're here. Here's what we can do. And now let's kind of work together, because, again, it comes down to one thing, that kid, that patient. You know, we want the best for that patient. So I think it's just understanding who is capable of doing what and how to get them in that, you know, in that realm easiest, the best way to establish those relationships, I think. You know, so for example, does she want, and I had it actually in my last position, when I wanted to send a kid to the orthopedic doctor, I didn't call the receptionist, I called the PA, and the PA did the scheduling for us. And normally he would also upset the receptionist because he would schedule people that the receptionist wasn't expecting. But, you know, we had that relationship where this athlete needs to be seen now, not in 6 days, you know? And so how can you work best and how can you manage those things best, I think, is what you have to establish with each clinic.
All right. Dr. Amy, do you have any setup like that to where people call your office? And
no, I mean, we've got the people who answer the phone. If there's a spot, they put you in a spot. If you have more questions or you have concerns, you talk to the doctor's nurse. So, you know, at the front, it's black and white. There's a spot. There's not a spot. In the back, we know, let's come at 11:30. So I'll miss my lunch if we need to talk about it longer. So there is that. But broken or needs an MRI or whatever, you're kind of spinning your wheels coming to me. Mm-hmm. You should just, let's just go there. Because if someone has an injury, it's like, I'm not going to order the MRI because I may not order it exactly the way the ortho wants to see it. If I'm not going to fix it, I'm not going to order it. If it's not my map, I'm not going to order it. I'm not going to spend $3,000 and not get the joint the way they want it. So I send people straight off rather than mess around with, you know, waiting a week to get an MRI and then go see them. That may frustrate the orthos, but I don't really care because I'm not going to waste people's money.
Yeah.
But my thought was with how to tell people you're here. I think if you even with the sports physical form, there's all that, yes, I won't do steroids. If you could add one more page, we are athletic trainers. We're here. And let the parents know. And if they take it to their pediatrician and that piece of paper is there, I'm going to know the school has it. So that may be a way to get to the pediatrician, because everyone has to have the physical form. Mm-hmm. So if you go to your PCP, give this to your doctor. If you've given him to urgent care, it's not going to, you know, if you hand it to the ready clinic, they're not going to care. But right. The parents would see it. So dear parents, PCP, /PCP. And somebody was saying to visit him. I think that would go, because I have some, like I said, I have so many high schools coming to me. Mm-hmm. I can sort of barely figure out who goes where most of the time. But that piece of paper might go really far with at least let the parents know.
Gotcha. Just kind of following up, starting up with a letter and then maybe making some contact. And I know I've actually gone out to some doctor's offices and mm-hmm. just said, hey, you know, I'm Jeremy. So mm-hmm. if we send kids here, who do I call? If I, you know, this kind of thing. And so they've done some stuff there. Excuse me, Mike has turned in his phone. I think he's dealing with an injury, so he didn't want that to be on the air, so he turned the phone so that he's not doing the eval live. So
okay.
Good job, Mike. All right, so that's definitely good advice for building that relationship. I hope this is beneficial to Caleb. Caleb is an athletic trainer in Shanghai, China, and he sent me an email and said he wanted us an email thanking the Sports Medicine Broadcast for spreading quality content, advocating for our profession, and making information easily accessible. He said he's confident that the Sports Medicine Broadcast is making a difference at his school and also his patient interventions. So I followed up with a question saying, what is your role there? And the Shanghai American School is where they go K through 12, and he's an athletic trainer, and he sees all the patients. Mm-hmm. So he sees kids in kindergarten, mm-hmm. and he said the nurse will often call him in and say, hey, you know, this kid got hurt on the playground. Can you come check it out? And so hopefully Caleb there in Shanghai, will, once this gets, you know, edited and released, he gets to benefit from Dr. Amy. So if somebody wants to contact you more, yeah, if somebody wants to contact you, is there a best way to do that? Are you on social media?
I am not.
Not on Twitter? Okay.
I am not. I guess via email would probably be the best way. It's archrist, it's because Kristen, at texaschildrenshospital.org.
All right. archrist at texaschildrenshospital.org.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that's Dr. Amy Kristen Hun. Did I get it right that time?
It's close. Yep.
Close?
He says Hun. Or the only thing that my husband doesn't like is Hun, like Attila the Hun. It's just a little too close, but it doesn't matter.
Hun. One time I'm going to get it right.
Yeah, no, it's right.
All right. Mike, any parting questions for Dr. Amy now that you're joining us back?
Yeah, sorry. No, nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing.
All right, so then I'm going to go ahead and mention sportshealth.com/SMB. That's where you can sign up to register. Each month they give away a gift card, and I need to check and see who got the last month. So each month at sportshealth.com/SMB, you can register to win a gift card from them as a listener to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. So you'll need the December code, which is FOOBAG, F-O-O-B-A-G, F-O-O-B-A-G. And then in January, the code is GHATS. That's where we have our large student athletic trainer workshop. Over 1,000 kids this year will be at Katy Tompkins High School. And again, that's G-H-A-T-S. GHATS will be the code for sportshealth.com/SMB for January. If you want to contact us, website sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, where you can watch live almost every single Wednesday, like we are today. Usually we start right at 12 Central, but we started early today for the kids to get a little bit of time and asking Dr. Amy questions about the path there. And then most likely you're going to find me on Twitter. I am on social media, PHS Sports Med. That's me, PHS. There's two S's in there, PHS, and then Sports Med. So for Jeremy,
Cooper,
Joshua,
Juanita,
Nicholas,
Tiana,
Dr. Amy, and then Mike on Skype, you guys say bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
That is a wrap. Dr. Amy, this section is specifically designed for you students to ask questions. We kind of practiced. So if there's questions about being a pediatrician, this is specifically for you, and Cooper's going to start us off.
Can you tell us briefly about the path to becoming a pediatrician?
Sure. When I was little, when I was in elementary school, I always thought I wanted to be a teacher, and thought that for a long time. And then when I went to college, I thought maybe not so much, and advertising seemed kind of cool because commercials are cool. So I went to my first advertising class, and the professor said, there are no jobs. You'll never get a job. Don't even think about trying to get a job. Okay, that was very discouraging, right? So then went to Communications was the name of the college that it was in. It was at UT. And so you had to take a class outside what you liked or what you thought you liked. So I took a speech communication class, and it was how you make the sounds and how your throat works and all that. And that was so cool. I thought it was a really neat class. I liked the physical of it and the anatomy of it. And that teacher said they had 40 people graduate last year and 400 offers. So it sounded like a better deal to start with. So speech therapy is what I did in college, and I got a master's degree in that. And as I was starting to get my master's degree, I had like a weird couple of weeks where I had to get people to agree to be my professors when I had to write my thesis. And so I had to talk to people and had to tell them my ideas and had to sit down with them. And I did that for a week. And then somebody, like two different people, said, you should be a doctor. Just weird, random people said it. So I never thought about it because that's a whole lot of school, and I didn't think I wanted to do that. I wanted to help people and talk to people. I didn't want to like be a surgeon. But then it kind of planted the seed, and I was old enough. It seemed like a good idea. And so I kind of figured out what I needed to do. I finished my master's, and as I was finishing my master's, I figured out what I needed to do to get to medical school, which was some more chemistry and some more biology and some genetics and some hard tests, and did it step by step. So then I ended up graduating, went to U of H, and took all those chemistries and everything. So my mom always used to say I should be a pediatrician, but I never really wanted to because I didn't really like necessarily the doctor I went to. You're scared of them when you're little. So it didn't seem like a good idea. Everybody crying all day long. but right. Everybody doesn't cry all day.
So how common do you think that route is? Because most people usually go to
Yeah, you're born thinking you want to do it. You always want to do it. You always want to do it. My parents always said you could do whatever you want to do. There was no one stopping me. It was kind of just, calculus and a whole bunch of chemistry. And did that seem like a good idea? And I liked sciences through high school, but it was never very challenging. You didn't have to study hard. You just kind of show up and it was good. So that much studying didn't always seem like a good idea, and helping people was always a good idea. So, but as a pediatrician, you talk to moms about what to do and how to do it and answer their questions. And then, all the medicine stuff too, but it's a lot of talking to people. So it was a weird route. I was older in school.
Gotcha. And then did you get married after college?
I got married when I was finished my master's. So I went to medical school married. I had my first son. I was pregnant second year of medical school, took a year break to raise him, and then came back to medical school with a one-year-old. And then I had my daughter in residency, and I had my youngest as I hit my practice here. So each new stage, a kid came in. So they've all taken lots of tests as babies, as waiting to be born. They took a lot of tests.
Gotcha. Very, very interesting. So I was just wondering, you said you were already in the path to medical school when you got married. Mm-hmm. Your husband was fully okay with you, you're already 6 years out of high school.
Yeah, no, absolutely. He stayed here and went to U of H, and I went to UT, and so that distance was good because I was kind of intense, I guess, so he needed it watered down. So then when I got back, I just had a lot of studying to do. So I was always at school. He worked nights. So we kind of just saw each other's socks for a while. But he worked at Randall's, so was working 70 hours a week. So do whatever I wanted to do. And so he got me through that part, so we didn't have as many loans as we would have if everybody would have been in school. And then as soon as I finished, he stayed home with kids. So
gotcha.
We flip-flop.
Gotcha. All right.
What kind of grades did you make in school?
In high school, I made good grades. I went to Waltrip. It's an HISD school. It was not, there was IB or pre-IB or whatever, but not AP, kind of wasn't around then. So I made pretty good grades. And like I said, I liked English a little bit. I liked science some. Thought calculus was actually pretty cool. Throw some letters into my math and I like it better than just adding and subtracting. That's no fun. But then in college, it was, calculus was hard, so it wasn't an awesome grade, but everything else did pretty well in. And medical school is not super hard. There's just a ton. So it's a lot of things to learn, not a lot of hard things to learn. So you just have to figure out how to shove all that in your brain. So, not bad.
So do you think that taking a year off with your firstborn benefited you at all because you had an extended time, or did that?
The choice was a week or a year. So I took a year.
Yeah.
And it was first and second year of medical school is books. Third and fourth is learning how to use a stethoscope and the physical of it and putting the books to work. So it was a natural break kind of, but I kind of knew that it was a planned thing. So I kind of knew that going into it, that this was going to be a good timing. Let me be right near delivery as the year ended. So I took finals and had high blood pressure and had to leave the final and lay on the floor. And the teachers were looking at me and I'm like, I'm okay. I just need to lay here for a minute. And then I would go back and finish the test. And so,
all right.
Bizarre.
What is your least and favorite part of being a pediatrician?
My favorite part is the kids. I mean, like I said, that's why I'm Dr. Amy. Some specialists look at me like, they don't know your last name. It's like, well, it doesn't matter to me. They know my phone number. They know where to find me. So I don't need all of that. They don't need to know it. And when I was in residency, the people that could find me to come back to my clinic always called me Dr. Amy. So I knew that was the key to them finding me again. But no, you sit down and you talk about Jake and Neverland Pirates. You ask him about, I know all the Ninja Turtles. I know Pokemon. You just start conversations. I think talking to the kids is my favorite part. But I also like the fact that the parents come in worried. They have questions. I know the answers. If I don't know the answers, we talk about what I think it is or what I think the next step would be or when I would worry. And just, the mom hasn't slept all night and she's freaking out. And, the baby threw up a bunch. And so you look at him and you calm her down. And then you move forward, and so you say when to call back. So that's my favorite part, is kind of, I guess, helping. Least favorite? I don't know. I don't really like waking up early. I would rather, work from, noon to whatever, but then I wouldn't see my own kids. So you got to wake up early to get the job done.
All right, so having office hours is the least favorite part of your job. That's pretty good.
Well, working 9 to 5 was going to be not a fun part. That's why I was trying to choose a job that was different anyway, because shuffling papers and then going back the next day and figuring out what papers you needed to shuffle was not inspired to me. I didn't really. I find joy.
So we talked a little bit about the grades you made in school. Mm-hmm. Again, some of these students here in 9th, 10th, 11th mm-hmm. grade maybe mm-hmm. are interested in being in the medical field, even sure. pediatrician. Some sure. of them specifically mentioned sure. that. So can you talk just a little bit more, maybe some advice or some tips for yep. this group?
So medical schools mostly care that you've graduated from an accredited university, an accredited college. So you could totally do junior college, get whatever, get the associates, and then move forward. They don't care where it was, really, and the more interesting route you took to get there, the better. If it was super easy and you just went and you made all A's, but you never talked to anybody and you never joined a club and you never did anything else, they're going to be a lot less interested than if you had a life. So graduating from a college, and then there's certain tests that you take, and those tests are kind of like AP tests, sort of. It's global. It's kind of all the same information for everybody, so they know if you're at that same level. And so there are, you know, books on what's on those tests, and there's classes that you can take to figure out how to make a better grade on those tests. But that's what it takes. And Texas is awesome because there used to be 7 medical schools. There's about to be 8. So there's lots of opportunities. Indiana has 1, you know, so it's where you're in a good spot to be able to find a position in a medical school. So, and it's kind of just, like I said, step by step. So I wanted to go, what classes do I need to have had? Okay, let me get those classes. What tests do I have to take? Let me figure out when that test is scheduled and how do you take that test? What's on that test? And I just, you know, step by step made it there. It wasn't the high school counselor telling me to do it, the college counselor. I had to go figure it out.
All right, so you were saying be part of something. So, you know, some of these kids are my student athletic trainers.
Absolutely.
And they'll work the games till 9 o'clock. So that means mm-hmm. that they leave the school at like 2:30 after they've been, you know, they get out of school
all
at 2:30,
yeah.
leave, and they go to Manville. Mm-hmm. They go to the game. They get home at 9 o'clock. So then they have to come home and do homework.
Right.
So can you speak a little bit about balancing being part of something and then maintaining sleep? Because as a pediatrician, it's obviously important.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, so I think the thing with going to school is you haven't shown anyone that you know time management. You haven't shown anyone that you've done anything but gone home at 2:30 and studied. I mean, that's, who gets to do that? That's crazy. You know, my kid's in the band. So I know you guys get home at 10 after the games. Everybody gets home so late. Trying to figure out when to get things done, but you do have to take care of yourself. So if you know it's coming, could you do part of it on Tuesday? Could you do part of it on Wednesday, then finish it on Thursday? So doing, you know, 2 pages of it a day or whatever it's going to take to not have that big load on game night, you know, and try to figure out which classes it's always on game night and which classes it's not, and put more effort into the daily for that. But that's kind of what I went by. You kind of show people that you've coordinated your time and not just gone to class and had people hand stuff to you and that's all you had to do.
All right, so briefly just talk about the sleep requirement for a high school age student.
You're supposed to get at least 8 hours. I mean, it's adult level and sometimes even more. So that's why on Saturdays I don't wake up till 2. You kind of make up the difference. If you don't wake up till 2, then you don't go to bed till midnight again, and then Sunday's all messed up, and then you're finally getting back into the groove by Wednesday. So trying to do the homework you need to do, but then turn the electronics off. If you have got those lights, the phone or the computer light going in your eyes, it wakes you up. So you have to try to put that part away and focus on just paper and pen right before you know it's time to go to sleep. Try not to do homework in your bed, because if you're laying on your bed saying don't fall asleep while you're reading Huckleberry Finn, then as soon as you put the book down, am I supposed to fall asleep or not fall asleep? And your brain doesn't quite know what to do. So sit on the floor, sit somewhere else, and then in bed sleep, not in bed text, not in bed play, fall out, whatever, and just in bed sleep. Other places do other things. So, and if you know you're about to be finished with your homework, but you've been stressed about it, get that last glass of water, get some warm tea, get something to kind of wind down, whatever your this is my last 30-minute kind of ritual. Got only have to hang on a little bit longer and then go to sleep, not have one more soda.
All right, so you have a high school son, and mm-hmm. a lot of the things are moving towards, you know, our kids are issued tablets as 9th and 10th graders,
yeah.
so a lot of the things we're doing is online. You know, all right, you got to do this assignment online.
Right.
And so can you speak to that briefly about, you know, the sleep requirement, the time management, making sure, you know, all right, you finish all of your online stuff before 9? Is that kind of what you're saying?
Kind of, yeah. If there's anything you've got that's just paper, if there is a book to read, if there is a worksheet, something to fill out as paper, if you could put the tablet away or dim the brightness. My son reads on a black screen with white letters mm-hmm. sometimes. And so he'll change the font around so there's not as much blue light going into his eyes. He falls asleep with the black screen. So it's a But he does the homework in a specific spot, my office, which eventually I guess I'll get it back, but I don't have one right now. It's all him. Mm-hmm. So that's where he sits and does his homework, and then upstairs to sleep. And just if you can separate those, even if it's just in the same room, separate your space where your head's only on your pillow. You're not using your pillow to put underneath you while you're doing your work, because then you're going to think about your work when you're trying to fall asleep.
All right. So you guys have any other questions about how to get there? I know, again, some of you are interested in medical. Any other questions that we didn't already discuss? Jasmine, I know you specifically said you were interested in being a pediatrician. Anything else that we didn't cover that you want to know? Great chance to ask. No. See, this is why we always come up with questions beforehand and practice them, because they're always nervous.
Yeah. Right.
Anybody? Tiana usually come up with good questions. No?
No, I don't have anything today.
Nothing right now? All right. Okay, so then we are going to take a brief break. We're going to actually try and call Mike. He's an athletic trainer in Dallas, and he has a master's of pediatric sports medicine.
Oh.
And so I figured he could help us out with some of the content and things like that.
Sure.
Give me good perspective. All right. So we just spent the first, I don't know, 20 minutes or so just discussing the path from high school to pediatrician, just so my students would have that advantage there to just kind of ask some questions. So at this point, we're going to move on to the topic at hand.